This podcast is produced in association with Tez Recruitment Subscription Service. Get unlimited adverts at a fixed annual cost with a recruitment subscription and reach an unrivaled audience of engaged teachers.
Hello and welcome to the Tez podcast. Coming up in September, we've got a series of webinars covering CPD, wellbeing, behaviour and much more. The series kicks off with Mark Steed, How to Maximise This Year's Recruitment Window, on Wednesday the 9th of September. For times and details, check out www.tez.com/school-webinars. And today I'm joined by Emily Harwick and Ben Keeling, who are both working in international schools. Emily is an assistant head of the secondary and a coordinator of the MYP at La Côte International School, Orbonne in Switzerland. And Ben is principal at Shrewsbury International School in Hong Kong. Thanks for joining us today. Emily, if I can come to you first, can you tell me a little bit about your job role?
Yeah, it encompasses quite a few things. I'm an assistant head in the secondary school, but we're quite a small school, so I'm also the MYP coordinator and a legacy position, really, being the head of English as well. So I've got quite a few things to juggle, but I really enjoy all the different aspects.
And Ben, can you tell us a little bit about what you do in your role as principal?
Yeah, so I lead and manage an international school in Hong Kong. We serve a student population aged between 3 and 11. We're relatively new, so we've been open for 2 years. We're coming into our third, and of course we've experienced a fair bit of disruption over the course of the last six to eight months. But I was appointed a year and a half prior to our opening, so I was also involved in the setup of campus and the building construct of our site. So yes, it's been an interesting journey, that's for sure. And we're now at the beginning of a new academic year and very much looking forward.
And Ben, at the moment, I believe that Hong Kong is in still some sort of form of lockdown. You're still planning to do remote learning?
We are. Hong Kong is a reasonably conservative region, I would say. They've had, thanks to good governance broadly, we've had good control over the spread of COVID. But they remain reasonably conservative. So, we saw an extended period of suspension of service last year, I think just over 14 weeks in total. And we're just about to start the beginning of next week, actually, Tuesday next week, we'll start our third academic year and it will be online initially. Very much hopeful, of course, that we'll see students back on campus perhaps as September draws to a close.
And Emily, I believe you're a little bit further ahead than where Ben is. You've been back for about a week now?
Yeah, well, we actually went back. We had March till April, a little bit of May, and then we went back on the 11th of May with bubbles and lots of measures in place. Our year 11s, only half of them were in school, and we still had our DP students at home for a bit longer. But by the end of the term, we had everybody back in the building. And that was quite nice to sort of at least pretend to be a bit normal for a while. And then over the summer, Switzerland has done pretty well keeping hold of the numbers. They did start to go up again around sort of July, and now they're creeping back up. So we are coming back onto campus with everybody. We've just got our staff training week this week, and then we're expecting all of our students back next week. And there are some different measures. Older students, so from year 11 upwards, will all have to wear masks when they can't be guaranteed 1.5 metres away from each other. So if they can go into a classroom and sit down and they've got the distance, then that's okay. But staff will be wearing masks around the building as well. So it will be a slightly different feel to how things were before.
Ben, coming to you, thinking about how your staff are feeling about the return, have you had a sense of what the general feeling is in the camp? What are your staff feeling about going back now?
We're actually going through an induction period. So we brought new staff out to the region at the very beginning of August. They served 14 days of quarantine and welcomed all of our staff back onto campus and onto site today, albeit a slightly interrupted day because we also suffered a typhoon today, which limited transportation and other bits and pieces in the region. So it's been quite a tumultuous time, as if 2020 needed any more drama. But anyway, We've had a really good day. And so I've got a reasonably good measure of where we are as a staff, and actually optimistic, positive, and very much excited as you would expect. I think the start of an academic year is always quite an exciting time. It's quite an optimistic time. It's filled with hopes and aspirations and excitement about the journey ahead. And actually, I think although we are returning to an online programme, and that isn't what our community would ideally like to see as September rolls around once more, we're going into the year ahead eyes wide open. And I think one of the challenges last year was that we were caught globally, I would suggest, caught somewhat cold by a series of events that none of us had experienced before. So you had school leaders worldwide doing their very best in very challenging circumstances, but without a great deal of expertise or experience to draw upon. This, you don't have a pandemic annually, thank goodness. So we're at least heading into this cycle informed. And I've spent a significant portion of the summer re-energizing and redesigning and more consciously arranging online provision. Of course, you need time to undertake that sort of task, and you need time together. You often need space and some sort of focused networking within the organization to try to bring together what is a program of study that is would ordinarily be unfamiliar. Unfortunately, of course, it's become all too familiar for many of us. I suspect that this return to online learning in Hong Kong is one of several phases of on and off offline learning for schools worldwide. I don't think we'll be the last school to be suspended or the last region to suffer suspension. Likely it will lead into Europe, certainly. I think likely we'll see periods of suspension again in the UK until some form of more secure resolution to the challenge of COVID arrives. So we sort of live in hope of that. But the mood in camp is great. People are excited and buoyant, and so they should be. We work with an exceptionally strong team. So it's an exciting time within any school, I would say.
I'm sure you're right. And Emily, what Ben's described there, some of the problems that have come that schools are facing that are linked to the coronavirus. How has staff retention been affected in your school? How has it impacted upon well-being, the teachers being repatriated? How have you felt being away from your family and friends at this time?
Yeah, I think that's been one of the hardest challenges for people. And, you know, being in Switzerland, a lot of people, I definitely moved to Switzerland initially from China thinking this will be great. I can be much nearer to my family. And wanting that connection with people is what drives people sometimes to move here. And then realizing that you can't. And at one point, all of our borders were closed. So we couldn't get into France. We couldn't get into Italy, Germany, everything around us. And it did feel very almost claustrophobic, being quite landlocked. And I think that has been a challenge for people. We went from being in school to suddenly going into this situation where our school closed because we had an incident of COVID on site. And then the following week, everywhere in Switzerland closed. So we almost had a bit of a head start in getting our heads around how we wanted to manage the situation. So in 4 days, we set up our VSE, and we also have the benefits of the wider organisation as well, who've been doing so much work behind the scenes to come up with what they think the virtual approach should be. So we can draw on all that knowledge as well across our organisation. So now we are hoping that we'll be able to stay open over the next few weeks, over the next year, but we have got contingency plans in place. And our parents were really, really happy with our VSE and what we could provide. So they were very positive. We did lots of surveys to find out if it was working, how people felt about it. And we know that we've got that system in place. So I think staff feel supported in that as well, because it's, you know, they want to get back into the classroom. They want to teach face to face, but they're aware that we've, you know, we're not taking any risks with their safety. If there is a situation where we need to go into a virtual world again, then we've got the systems in place and we can do that if it's required.
Now, Ben, I'm interested with the way that the term ended at the end of your 2020 academic year. Did you notice less staff movement? Do you think that one of the effects of the pandemic was that teachers didn't move schools quite as much as they normally would?
Oh, that's interesting. It's possible, isn't it, that would have an effect. Of course, living in Hong Kong and on this side of the world, we were among the first regions to experience the impact of COVID at all. And initially, there was I suppose an expectation or a possibility that it would remain regional. And slowly but surely, over the course of February, March, April, we saw it spread westwards. So perhaps it may well be that staff are more likely to stay put. But I'd like to think it speaks more about the faith and the investment that we place in staff more generally. And levels of retention for us have been extremely positive. Global movement is somewhat restricted at the moment, that's true. And there has, as Emily said there have been moments where people have felt disconnected and isolated and perhaps, yes, a little claustrophobic at times. But your emotional response to these kind of circumstances is often malleable to a degree, somewhat controllable by the messages around you and the response that envelops you. And I think as a school leader, I have a responsibility for the emotional response and well-being of staff. And I think there is a level of control and rationality that we can apply to a circumstance that is broadly out of our control. So, of course, we would all have loved to travel over the world during the course of the summer break, just gone, of course, but it's just not to be. So you have two paths ahead of you. You wring your hands in frustration, or you make the best of the situation that you find yourself in. And I think teachers are pretty good at that, actually, making the best of a circumstance which perhaps you wouldn't have chosen in the best possible circumstances, but you're there nonetheless, you're surrounded by good people, you have a good support network upon you. As Emily said earlier, the idea that we are sort of living and learning and able to draw upon support networks across school, this was a very new and unfamiliar environment 6 months ago. Here we are all of a sudden extremely well-versed in digital conferencing and screen sharing and all the rest of it. Here we are hosting a podcast across two separate continents. So we're doing reasonably well, I would say. And yet I'm quite a big believer in recognizing our own intellectual control of sometimes dramatic emotional response.
Very true words there. Emily, were you recruiting during lockdown? And if you were, what was that like?
We actually had most of our recruitment sewn up before lockdown. We didn't have anybody, you know, deciding that they wanted to leave because of the situation or anything like that. And I think in Switzerland, things are pretty stable in terms of recruitment because once you get in, you want to stay. And there's this phrase, like the golden handcuffs. So people come to Switzerland and then they can never leave because, you know, the quality of life is so good. And if you've got children, you know, you can just take them in the mountains, you're skiing, you're by the lake. It's a really wonderful place to live. So we don't really have a lot of problems recruiting a lot of the time. And what we did find is that the people that we knew were going to leave, we did do quite a bit of promotion from inside the school. So internal promotions happened, I don't know, more frequently, but that definitely happened this year. And we were looking for a principal as well, which possibly isn't the best time to do that. But we've got a fantastic principal as well now from within the organisation. So I think, again, we're lucky in that global organisation that we can have some movement within that if people do want to move, but they generally tend to stay within the organisation as well. I do have friends though who were in Kuala Lumpur when this all happened, and they had to resign and leave because the school situation was so uncertain. It was a boarding school, and they just didn't have students in place for the next year. So they were offered salary cuts to stay. You know, it was suggested that maybe the school wouldn't be open. So a lot of staff left needing that security. And I think, you know, I've heard a lot of those situations where perhaps schools which aren't as well established or are finding it financially difficult to retain students have had to let staff go. And that's obviously a knock-on effect of this whole situation.
Two really good examples of the benefits of large organisations there. Ben, have you seen any major challenges in your recruitment?
I was actually back in the UK in January, just before it sort of all began to kick off. And actually, very similarly, Hong Kong and Switzerland, I would suggest, are probably on at the top end of people's lists when they're considering of places to move overseas. So we have some real advantage there, I think, a shared advantage. No doubt colleagues in Singapore and Dubai would likely say something similar. These are the sorts of regions that people tend to be more attracted to for one reason or other, but they tend to be more attracted to. And that helps with recruitment. It also helps with retainment. I was out in the UK in January. And then, of course, as a new school, we're also growing. Now, in spite of what you may fear, and Emily's quite right, we've heard some extremely challenging stories from other sectors, other schools, other regions. But we've been able to grow our student body during the course of COVID and the lockdown, in spite of the very obvious challenges in doing so, which means that a new school, a growing school, an aspirational school, we've been recruiting significantly, not only during January, but also during a window in May. Now, I was supposed to fly back to London in May and couldn't, of course. So instead, conducted our interviews and shortlisting process via conference call, much as we're doing this afternoon. So, it's been an interesting process, but in many ways, it's validated a selection process and a talent identification process, I think, that has served us well. I think I was anticipating a greater degree of distinction between the round in January in situ at home, wherever home is these days, and virtually in May. So we conducted two windows essentially back to back, and we've been extremely pleased with the appointments made. Certainly they're serving us very well during the course of the week so far.
Emily, does that speak to your experience? Have you found that virtual recruitment has been on par with in-person recruitment?
Yeah, I mean, we've always done quite a lot of virtual recruitment. We do this the same kind of thing. Our principal goes to a jobs fair or a recruitment fair in January. But we always have people maybe wanting to leave a little bit later than that or not knowing their intentions. So last year, I was recruiting for two English teachers right at the end of the year. They were in Indonesia. You know, there's no way that they could have come over in person. But speaking to them virtually, you can ask questions that give you a sense of who these people are, what their priorities are, where their passions lie. And we have a process where they would speak to the head of department in the first instance. And then if the head of department feels that they could work with them, that they're a viable candidate, then they go through a process ending up with the principal. So I think we have that process in place, and people who we have recruited from overseas and haven't actually seen face-to-face have ended up fitting into our school community really well. So that hasn't necessarily changed too much, I would say, because of the situation. Perhaps some questions are a bit different. You know, can you find your way around a computer and that kind of thing? We need to know that for sure. But yeah, I don't think that the process has necessarily changed.
That's a thing that comes up quite a lot, that does using virtual interviews, like not video interviews, give an advantage to tech-savvy teachers? But actually, in this climate, isn't that exactly what we want?
Yeah, I think that's entirely possible. It's interesting. I mean, I would still vastly prefer to meet people in person, but that has as much to do with retention and the development of really secure and personal relationships with candidates. Because, of course, running an international school, I'm essentially encouraging someone to emigrate. You know, that's a big ask. Please leave your family and friends and your little nice social network and join me over in Hong Kong. Now, as exciting as that sounds, there's also a certain trepidation about that experience. So there's a nervousness to it. And I think if I'm able to meet them in person, it's much easier for me to convey that sense of connection and a sort of supportiveness of their move on a very personal level, beyond the professional development and aspirational sort of, you know, a side of the professional journey that they're about to take. I think a lot of it's about personal connection, and it is difficult to replace that. There are certain tricks and tips that you can use to sort of generate that sense of connection with people online. Unlike Emily, we don't attend any job fairs per se. We run our We run our recruitment actually through the TIT, through the TS, you'll be pleased to hear. And then we shortlist, people apply specifically to our school, I suppose, is what I'm getting at there. And we shortlist sort of in-house. And I think, if anything, I think the round that we've conducted online, and it is my first round online, having been involved in interviews for a number of years, to run a sort of a process online exclusively, I think if anything, it sharpens the underlying strategy behind any good recruitment process. It only refines it. Of course, everything is less reliant upon a personal connection and a good feeling, and there's a little bit more analytical work required. But it really puts your process to the test, if indeed it is a successful process. And I think for us, we found it quite self-validating to a degree, that actually our underlying analysis of candidates' experience and likelihood of quality in terms of that, the search for truly valuable colleagues, I think we've been quite well validated, arguably with a degree of surprise, because there's also uncertainty wrapped up in this instance. We found it a quite a useful process, really, for clarifying the underlying clerical work and assessment that leads you towards meeting the right people, interviewing the right people, asking the right questions, and ultimately identifying a really good fit for your organisation.
It's such a complicated process, isn't it? And one that's just crucial to get right, to ensure that you have that right mix of people in your organisation.
But it's also a joy and a complete privilege. You know, I mean, I'm sure Emily's the same. We have queues and queues of people wanting to work at schools like ours. There aren't many heads in the world that would be able to select in the way in which I'm absolutely and utterly privileged to do. We're able to refine our searches to such a degree because of the sheer volume of interest, both in Hong Kong and within the growing reputation that Shrewsbury has garnered over the course of its time working overseas, but of course alongside the Connected School in the UK.
And Emily, has what's happened in the last few months changed the way that you're going to offer candidates or how you market your school?
I don't think so necessarily. I think the school speaks for itself still, and I think we're in that privileged position where we're oversubscribed in how many people want to come and work here, so we can pick the best candidates for what we need. We're growing. We're a growing school, and it may be that we do need to recruit in the future. But as I said, we also have really strong staff retention as well. And from having 35 new staff last year, when we really grew exponentially because of another school closure in the region, we only needed to recruit 4 members of staff for the secondary team this year. So and that was all sewn up very early on. So we're hoping that we've got a few years now of stability where we can just get some consistency within our staff body, and just really do our best for the students that we have.
And Ben, you talk a lot about the time that you spend speaking to your candidates and the whole interview process. Are you expecting that candidates are going to have different priorities when they're trying to settle their contracts in the upcoming year? Do you think they'll be looking to have better healthcare benefits or perhaps the flights home? That would be more of a concern about what to tie into their contract. What do you predict is going to change?
I suspect that people might be more alert to these matters. I don't expect, although I would be happy to be proven wrong, but I don't expect that we'll see any particular distinction other than perhaps staff being more conscious of the benefits available. Perhaps 2 or 3 years ago, you may not really talking in any great detail about health coverage, for example, but inevitably people are getting a little bit more alert to that. Again, we're supported so well regionally because Hong Kong has its own fantastic healthcare system in addition to the private healthcare that we offer. But things like flights and accessibility and maneuverability around the region. But again, even though and in spite of the current constraint here, the government has managed the COVID outbreak regionally extremely well. So while we may be moving to an online system, we're looking at around about 20, 30, 40 cases a day at the moment, which is low when you compare to the case volume currently being experienced in the UK, but does also serve that view of conservatism and pragmatism that is very much attuned to Hong Kong, i.e. There's a relatively low level of risk tolerance, particularly when it comes to health matters, and people are incredibly prudent here. So I don't expect that there'll be a huge or radical shift in the sort of demands made or expectations from new appointments or engagements at the point of interview. But I do wonder whether people might be just a little bit more alert to those things. I would also expect that, again, we come back to the softer side of the recruitment process, which is the relationship building side. Okay, if you're going to move me halfway across the world, I'll do so for someone that feels genuine and sincere in their support of me personally and professionally. And I think it might be that people are perhaps expecting, and dare I say, rightly so, expecting a real closeness and care and diligence in the way that we engage with them as a human being, as well as potentially the next star of your school, organisation, year group, etc.
Thanks, Ben. Now, Emily, if we think about the IB specifically, do you think the curriculum has now got more resonance for teachers in light of what's been happening in the world in the last few months, not just thinking about the coronavirus, but what's happened in America with Black Lives Matter and the impact that's had across the rest of the world? Do you think the appeal of teaching something that's got so much to it in terms of the ethics and the worthiness of it, do you think that will help you attract more candidates?
I think it has to. I think everything that's happened this week in UK education, with the A-level results, the GCSEs, the whole fiasco of that has just made people think what else is out there. And I've written an article about the MYP, could that be an option for replacing GCSE? Because actually the whole ethos of that is about holistic learners, teaching international mindedness. And it is that flexibility of approach as well. So, you know, with the MYP, you can fill that curriculum with whatever content you want. You teach it conceptually, so the concepts are there for you to draw on, but you're responsible for the content, so you can really backwards plan from what you're doing at the diploma level and at IGCSE if you're doing that as we are. And at the end of last year, I was able to react to what was happening in the world. So when Black Lives Matter happened, I was teaching my students to dissect cartoons and have a look at some of the propaganda that was being put out, thinking about fake news, thinking about different perspectives. And that was really exciting for them because it was immediate, it was happening now, it was their world. And I think that's one of the benefits of an international education is that you can draw on those things that are happening and get your students interested. And also able to speak out about it as well, because we have opportunities with the service aspect of the IB as well to really make a difference and make a change in people's lives as well. And that can be quite inspiring and make people feel a bit more passionate about education, as opposed to just working out what grade Ofqual are going to award your students who've been working hard for years as well. And I think just in terms of the type of people that we're able to attract maybe into international education in general, I was always told that people who go and teach abroad are either running away from something or they're running to something, which I'm not sure is exactly true. But I think there may be people who are disillusioned with what's been happening in the UK and want something different. And I think, you know, I've seen on Twitter, there's lots and lots of younger people maybe without families, taking a risk, going abroad for the first time, and maybe that's the kind of people who might feel that this is their moment to do that. I'm not sure whether people with families, you know, would want to make that move now necessarily if they know that they're going to be away from extended family for a long period of time. That might be a consideration for them. But you know, people have lots of different motivations and draws. And I think if you can tap into that as a school in terms of who you want to recruit and why you're looking for that type of person, then that can be quite powerful as well.
I'm sure a lot of teachers with younger families will be thinking, I don't want my children to face disasters like this in their future. I want them to have a more holistic education, and the IB is incredibly attractive from that point of view too, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. If you have your own children and you're seeing a system that looks broken, then finding something for them as well is also attractive.
This podcast is produced in association with TES Recruitment Subscription Service. Get unlimited adverts at a fixed annual cost with a recruitment subscription and reach an unrivaled audience of engaged teachers.